Hello, my name's Sylvester McCoy, Doctor Who number 7. You are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Yes, that's what. There's something wrong with the speaker. Hello.
Hi.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 443 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we're celebrating a fantastic point in Doctor Who television history, with just the right blend of nostalgia, childhood terror, whimsical science fiction, and guerrilla marketing. But it's organic. I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay. And this week, we're going to begin our Sarah Jane Adventures rewatch, not following the Doctor Who trope. And we're going to start at the beginning, strangely enough, in the premiere story of Invasion of the Bane. It's a story that they wrote primarily for tweens and teens, but has enough of the Doctor Who mythology and RTD magic to keep the not-so-teens engaged as well.
Our story takes us to Bannerman Road in the late 2000s, where a father and daughter move in across the way from a rather eccentric journalist named,
It doesn't take long for Maria to discover that her neighbor has a lot more going on than just the neighborhood rumors suggest, and learns this just in time, too.
Along with the schoolmate, they start looking into a beverage manufacturer, Bubble Shock, that seems to be hiding something nefarious from the bottle-chugging public, and sure enough, it's aliens.
So using some advanced tech, some nostalgic storytelling, and a determination that only Sarah Jane can manage while driving a little mint green car, the world and the boy with no navel are saved from the Bane just in time for tea.
I met this man, a very special man, called the Doctor. And years ago, we traveled together.
In space.
Space and time. Then it came to an end. And suddenly, I was back to a normal life. Electric bills, there's pipes, bus tickets, and rain.
She's completely looped the loop.
There, do you see? Who can I talk to about it? For years, I tried to forget. And then I met him again. The Doctor. We both changed. But it's funny because we were still both the same.
So what are everyone's quick takes on the story as a sort of Doctor Who for kids concept? Did it hit the target audience without alienating older or even younger viewers in everyone's mind?
I thought in general this particular episode took a little bit to get started, but once we actually got properly introduced to Sarah Jane, I was in.
Yeah, I was going to say that I've never watched a full episode of Sarah Jane. I've seen like clips and things like that, so this is a brand new experience for me. And it felt like going home. Like, there was enough familiar with it that it was like, oh, this feels so good. And it did take a little bit to get going, but it there was enough familiarity there that I was like, no, I'm good with it. Like, tell the story. I don't care.
It does very much feel like RTD era Doctor Who.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. And RTD when he's on his feet, too. Because this is like three seasons already in the bag for Doctor Who proper. These were up in 2009, I think, when this aired. So, yeah, he's hitting full stride.
I can forgive a little bit of the slow start because I appreciate setting up some of the characters, knowing that based on who they are, even just at the beginning, that we need to know some of their backstory. So I accept that as like, let's nail it down, get it out of the way, and then now we don't have to really spend any more time, hopefully, on that in the future.
Mm-hmm. Sort of indicative of the way a lot of, not necessarily pilots, but sort of introductions to a new facet of the story you thought you knew, you have to establish your new players first. So we have to get to know Maria pretty well, and we have to kind of understand exactly why it is that she's, you know, she's sort of snooping around. You know, well, there's giant glowing lights outside her bedroom window. It's, you know, Sarah Jane doesn't try terribly, terribly hard to mask the fact that she's got some weird hijinks going on at her house.
She just gives everyone the evil stare at the beginning, which is not necessarily the way to get a teenager to stay away. Yeah. They know how to overcome that.
Comes across really brittle.
If you're coming into this completely new, as like I imagine some kids may have, like, I'm sure their parents were like, oh, Doctor Who, it's like, you know, this is one of my favorite shows. Here's the kids' version. Sit down and watch this. And they may not have any idea who Sarah Jane is. So sitting down and, like, all of a sudden it's just she is a grumpy old lady that doesn't want anything to do with anybody else. And I loved that aspect of it. It was so much fun.
She's telling them to get off her lawn.
Yeah, quite literally.
Sort of forced into pleasant news. Yeah, hello, I got stuff to do. Gotta go. But well, that's I'm glad you bring that up, Jay, because when this first aired, so Doctor Who was really running strong, as we just mentioned, and you could really kind of make an assumption that a good majority of viewers of all age demographics knew, for a UK audience, knew the universe well enough that they didn't have to go into a lot of backstory. They didn't, you know, Sarah Jane starts dropping references to the Doctor. You know, she's got pictures of the brig and Harry Sullivan up in her flat. It's just, you know, and none of this really needs a whole lot of exposition. But they might not really know Sarah Jane very well because she just appeared in the reunion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's it may be tangentially known that she's a previous companion, but they've never seen any of the. There was no means for them to go back and see any of that previous content. So that aspect of it had to be sort of written into the script with her reminiscing moments. Jay, as you mentioned, that there may be viewers who have absolutely no comprehension of Doctor Who at all or what any of this means. And it's kind of difficult for us to mentally separate from that. But if you were to put this down in front of really non-Who familiar viewers, would a show like this, in the way this was constructed, would this even work?
I feel like it relies pretty heavily on the acceptance of the Doctor Who universe. Like, okay, aliens come to Earth all the time. You know, there's sonic technology. You've got a robot dog floating through space in your closet. Like, there's a lot of things that you just kind of have to accept as known if you're going to get anywhere with this show. So, yeah, it's if you don't know anything about the Hooniverse, you know, whereas with Torchwood, we know a lot of people that came into the fandom through that show. I don't feel like this show is going to have that same kind of accessibility.
I was going to say, I think it works as well as the first series of Eccleston works. You know, you're dropping the whole audience in the middle of an ongoing adventure, and you just kind of have to roll with it. And I think especially if you're targeting it towards a younger audience, like, they might be more primed to accept, like, this is the universe you're in, and it's got all these wacky elements to it, and that's just part of it. Let's go.
I tend to agree more with Haley. I think that you're going to get the overall idea, the feeling, the fun aspects of it, and I think that you can accept and roll with some of the more specific to Doctor Who references, and some of them will just fly right past, and pictures don't mean anything except that there's someone there that meant somebody to her. But sonic technology and the lipstick, it's cool regardless of whether you understand what's really happening. It's a gadget. Kids would get that. Same with the phone. That's not something that we've seen before, but it could just be this world has gadgets. They mean something. The same with K-9 and the computer. Mm-hmm. Mr. Smith is, I'm assuming, will grow to know who he is and more about him. But that kind of thing is something you can accept in this world and not necessarily need to know that there is a long history with K-9. Mm-hmm. He's just out there and that's her dog.
Yeah.
Well, given your original broadcast audience or your original target broadcast audience, not really thinking of this particular series as far as global syndication and things like that, and he's just really the whole concept was behind this was to sort of give something to younger viewers to keep them just as excited about the flagship program or the flagship series as their peers and elders are. does it even matter? I mean, is it a matter of, okay, well, no, maybe this doesn't work for a handful of tweens and things that would be coming into it absolutely cold. Maybe they wouldn't get quite the same level of enjoyment out of it, but it doesn't matter because it wasn't made for them.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I feel like a lot of this relies heavily on the fact that it is a Doctor Who spinoff, that anyone that's going to sit down and watch it has at least heard of Doctor Who, if not watched a bit. So it's the barrier for entry is kind of lowered in that regards, I guess.
Mm.
But
it's kind of hard to pitch the series without mentioning Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that will become more apparent with some of, you know, future storylines, villains, etc., characters and things like that. Mm. But not to get ahead of it, I think that this could also be a gateway if you've, I mean, kind of the point, like
farm team. Yep.
Yeah, get kids excited about it and then they become the, she was on this show before. Let me go check that out. Let me go see some other stuff.
Now that I'm old enough to watch the episodes that my parents wouldn't let me watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of thinking about this and comparing it to Class, which we discussed on its brief run. But this one, the Doctor is not in the first episode, but it definitely feels very much part of the Doctor Who universe. Whereas Class, I think, is the opposite. It's like they put the Doctor in there at the beginning, but aside from the Doctor being in it, it didn't feel like Doctor Who as much. And it's just interesting that that's the path both shows took.
Hmm.
We got our monster, which I feel like with Class was much more vague.
Mm.
And with this, you got the reveal of a suit coming off. The skin suit where they're like, stretching out of it. We've seen that before.
I wonder if that's in any way indicative, though, of your target demographic and the fact that you're working towards the younger end of the teen spectrum as opposed to your high school and your secondary school teens. Whereas in Class, it's going to be more important to establish real empathy and connection and identification with your characters more so than their whatever their encompassing conflict is going to be, whatever the baddie is. The baddie isn't necessarily as important or interesting as their sort of internal struggles and their dynamics within their group. Because with this, I mean, we've got, I can never even remember, what's the Maria's friend's name? Kelsey? Is it Kelsey? It's just, she's just deciding that she wants to, snuggle up with just about anything that she sees. Oh, your dad's quite fit. Oh, that guy over there. I'm going to call him Muffin for the rest of the episode. Like, damn, girl, take it down a notch, would you?
She also just kind of walks in and says, all right, you're my best friend now.
Yeah.
Come with me. This is the thing you're going to do.
Not for nothing. I was picking up on a lot of Courtney vibes.
Yep.
From her.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Just not kind of, this is who I am. I'm going to be really grating and annoying, but I'm not going to apologize for it. So enjoy.
So are there any elements that didn't land right or that you wish were or weren't included? Kelsey,
I'm gonna button that up. I didn't dislike the character, but the parallels were so close that I almost wanted to dislike her because I was waiting for it to become Courtney.
Somebody has to move the story, though, and she's very much a mover and shaker of things.
Yeah, she's the bull in the china shop.
Reminded you that you disliked Courtney. Is that the problem with her?
Yeah, that's pretty
basically
much it.
Yeah. I was going to say, she very much had that similar vibe, but pulled it off better in this one. It wasn't, to Julie's point, you know, she kind of helped to push the story along instead of being a hindrance to the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to have the character that can guide the new kid around. And how better to do that than someone who just knows all of the ways to get around the city for free. Here's this thing that's going on. I've got this friend who can get us into these places. So she's the local guide to facilitate whenever needed, just the get from point A to point B.
And she's also, she's got a bit of a disregard for authority. So she can say the blunt things, which gets a rise out of the people that you need to work up. You need to get Sarah Jane a little spiky at moments, so that she'll say the things that you need her to say, and she's going to need to challenge the security system at the Bubble Shock factory and such. So yeah,
well, ask the guy for burgers.
Right.
We also need somebody to get Maria into trouble, and I assume that's going to have to happen on more than one occasion.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I was kind of hoping that they would get around to Luke's development a little sooner. I felt like that came in a little late in the story, because it's an interesting character. You know, he's this construct. And I know that you can only explore that so far in a kid's show kind of thing. The whole idea of, you know, I'm comprised of the DNA of whatever, of everybody that's been bioscanned the way in here and stuff. But I just thought that was really interesting. I was hoping that they'd be able to give him more awareness.
Isn't this just the introduction of him though? Don't we get, I mean, we will explore that throughout the seasons.
Yeah, but it was kind of a weird counterpoint to that. We spent so much time establishing the other characters that he just quite literally gets thrown into it. And you're like, yeah, no time to explain anything. Go.
Right. And I'm going to live with you now.
Yeah. I also kind of just like, you know, there's him as a character, but also him as the plot device. It was like, you know, you get the reveal of, oh, this is why he was created. This is what he's for. But it doesn't matter anymore. Like, it would have been nice if he was still important for some reason.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was the only kind of sticking point I had with this was it was this big thing that he got created and, you know, has all of these amazing powers and things like that. And within 10, 15 minutes of finding that out, it's like, okay, and your purpose is done. Now you're just a kid.
Mm-hmm. So far.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
no, and that's but at the end of the first episode, that's what you're left feeling. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm sure there's more to come, but so the other side of the coin, what were some of the moments that really stood out in your memory? What made this a good story in your calculations?
To kind of carry just that specific thread, I think the flip side of what we see with Luke is that it is a developmental leap for Sarah Jane to go from being a loner on her own, doesn't even want to talk to neighbors because she has an important job, to agreeing to be a mother to a kid. And I think that is where that relationship, I think, we'll see develop over time. And I think that even though he was introduced a little later on and we finally discover what he is and what that means in that moment, I think watching her grow to be the mother is what I'm excited to watch and see happen.
Yeah. It's a bit of an abrupt transition. It might leave the more skeptical viewer saying, why did she give into this quite so quickly? But as the dialogue suggests, you know, it's something that she's coming to realize that that she has the capacity for and feels some sort of a compelling need. And I guess there's a bit of possessiveness in the fact that she came to Luke's rescue, that she feels in a way responsible for his ongoing well-being, but at the same time, she's fascinated from a journalistic standpoint. And she might not actually express that out loud, but you know, this is an interesting thing to watch and document too. I'm just not going to tell him that I'm keeping this journal of Luke's progress.
But who better? She knows enough about UNIT and everything else that she's had to deal with in the past to know that if she were to hand him over,
he would be dissected.
Or leave him there, exactly. Yeah. So you get that she cares enough and understands that much.
Right.
That she has to keep him. And I enjoyed and I loved the humor of, well, I like your name. Can I just have that? That he is totally clueless. And I love that they played with that over and over in a few moments where you go from just a little bit of the, not for real, but like, oh, scary moment to comedic relief of, really? That, I mean, it makes sense. That's a funny joke.
I loved the bit of Sarah Jane having the discussion with the, I can't even remember her name, the lady in charge of the...
Oh, Wormwood. Miss Wormwood. Yeah. Mrs. Wormwood, yeah.
Having that moment of like, and almost, I can't remember if she like explicitly said it, but very much implied, like, I am giving you the chance to end this peacefully before I wreck you. You know, and it was in that moment kind of like, it's like, I have to give her the chance of like, you learned a lot from the doctor. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah. She was always an empathetic character in that regard. Maybe not to the same degree that a Joe Grant might have been, as far as, you know, everybody deserves, you know, the chance for redemption. But in this particular case, I love the fact that she was so thorough on this. Like, she came in, by the time they're face to face in that sequence, they know her name. She's been snooping around for a long time, leaving a lot of voicemails and emails and who knows what. And she's just being a, you know, typical, like, doing her due diligence as her profession indicates. But they know.
They know that she knows that they know that she knows that they know.
For me personally, I think, and I wasn't really expecting it because I had all but forgotten it, this series gives Murray Gold an opportunity to do his thing, but do it in a much lighter, more youthful way, because he's trying to write stuff that is just as poppy as it is orchestrated. So it's his chance to like, he, even down to writing the Bubble Shock jingle and all that stuff. It's just, it's Murray again, but it's him playing with stuff that wasn't always the huge full chorus and 80 piece orchestra that he would have done for Doctor Who in the same year. This was his chance to work with like a little studio band and that kind of stuff and have some fun with it. So it's cool to hear that again.
Mm-hmm. I really liked it. It was kind of part of the same discussion with her accepting motherhood. But when she talked about, she realized she could have her own adventures doing the same thing she did with the doctor, but doing it herself. And it kind of establishes the premise for the entire show, but yeah. Her deciding to be the hero.
And I know it was a little bit of a voiceover, but when they pan away at the very end, that very, very heartfelt moment of everything you need is right here. And she means it is in Aliens Come Here and we can sort them out together. But also, if you take that in a pull it away from the show, a lot of times that's a message that's a very powerful one for other people. Everything that you need is right there where you are. So mm-hmm. I like those moments mm-hmm. from this show.
Also, her revealing the adulthood secret to the kids that we don't know what we're doing either.
Yeah.
If kids would just listen to that knowledge and then realize that, yeah, we're still grown up too. We don't know this all figured out.
Mm-hmm. I had that conversation come at me. Well, had that conversation as a result of a question that came at the back of my head in the car today. And I was asked from the car seat, Dada, are grown-ups the biggest kids there are? Yes, and. That's basically it, yeah.
Why do you think we play your games with you, child?
I'm not doing it for your benefit. I play to win. Yeah, I'm glad we're breaking into this. This is, Jay, you had said that you were getting a couple of your boys to sit down and watch it for the first time. Did they have reactions of note to that you picked up on?
Nope, because I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
So okay.
We're gonna sit down this weekend and go through episodes 1 and 2.
Cool. Okay.
So yeah. Next episode will have something. But
do that, yeah, because and on a technical note for folks that are going to be sort of watching or rewatching along with us, this being not really a pilot but just sort of a premiere episode, they cut it in a full hour. But in the stories that follow, they're broken up into two-parters. We're going to take the two-parters in chunks. So treat these as our viewing blocks so that we can get through these things in a reasonable amount of review time.
Because also we're used to Classic Who, and that's just how we roll.
Yeah, we want to discuss the whole story and not stop on the cliffhanger.
Precisely. Yeah. So you're welcome.
Yeah. One last thing that I thought was very interesting is the naming convention. I think, Jay, you mentioned, or Kier, the Wormwood. That's a very, when you're in high school, you're looking for those connections. So Wormwood being in the drink and
being a biblical reference.
Yeah, those kinds of things are sometimes those Easter eggs or connections are made in adult shows, but it's on the nose, and I just love that, and I hope we see more of that, because I loved that when I was a high school nerd, and I'm hoping that kids would pick up on that, and I like it.
Yeah.
Those are the things that lead to additional research.
Yes.
Going out after the credits roll and then, you know, going on the internet and finding out, was that really? Was that wormwood was a thing? What? Oh, okay. My parents told me that had something to do with some weird green drink that they drink. I don't know what
that is. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, all in all, I think this was a fun introduction, and I'm actually excited to watch the rest of it.
Yeah. Plus Sonic lipstick. Exactly. Which is...
But also looking at it at the moment, it didn't work. I'm like, ah, oh, here we go. Push the button this way. It's very Doctor Who.
You gotta smack the side of it a few times to get it to work. But that thing had range. She goes, when she's driving up on the place, like she's pointing that thing from hundreds of yards away and it's working on the gates. So much better than a sonic screwdriver.
It's like the tiny little pea shooter from Men in Black 2.
Oh, yeah. The
everything comes small packages are just so much more powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only good for one shot, but man, what a shot.
All right, we ready to get into the news?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of it, right?
Yeah, the news that we have, at least.
Well, we got the showrunner before our last episode, so this week we're supposed to get the doctor, right?
Right, so we're gonna record this absolutely non-news segment, and then once this is all done and we shut all of our recorders off, the real stuff will drop. So you're welcome, everybody. Now, this is an absolutely nothing burger of a news week, because this is one of those things that leads us to wonder whether one of our upcoming discussions is going to be exactly what the heck is going on in the BBC marketing and social media management departments. Because I don't really understand what they're doing for a show that is supposed to be premiering this season. Here we are, middle of autumn.
My leaves are changing colors, and I expected Doctor Who by now.
Or at least the announcement of a date.
I can go outside and not melt. I should have Doctor Who on my screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the little bit that we did get was, I mean, we did happen to see the Doctor on our screens. Can we just like revel in that for a moment? Because
hiya.
How many seconds?
That's not important.
Isn't it, though? Isn't it, though?
Yeah. Isn't it?
They could have at least put a bumper at the end of the 7 seconds or whatever that was like, see the Doctor again on October 14th or whatever.
Right. Well,
here's... But see, that's... Well, go ahead.
Okay, so...
Who's going to start the rant?
Yeah, it could
if
get ugly.
If you'd like to skip the rant, okay, listener.
Yeah.
Let's explain what we're talking about here. There was a brief little snippet of like the color test bars on the screen. They warble and you can kind of see the Doctor's face through the test pattern, and a little bit of audio, if I remember
just
correctly.
Asking, is this thing on or can you hear me?
And then it cuts to... Well, it was Strictly Come Dancing or
Strictly
whatever.
Strictly Come Dancing, so. Right, which is what everybody was watching at the time. So this was unannounced. Right. It was like, and they tried to make it out on the social media feed saying, oh, the Doctor tried to hack in to BBC Broadcasting to send an important message.
Maybe that's the problem. Facebook and Instagram were down on Monday. They had like this big social media campaign that was supposed to go with it, and they couldn't do it.
They borked it.
Or did the Doctor crash it and that's the real story?
So, she was trying to get our attention.
Great job.
The whole world. they best awesome. Change the story of season one, or of episode one, and plug that in there.
Okay. As long as you all want to run with this, I'm just disgusted. So you can all have jokes, but I'm
mad. I want to know when it's going to start.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. This is an absolutely unacceptable amount of delay for even giving us a date. You could even give us a date that's another stone throw away and say, oh, sorry, well, things being what they are, you know, this is an executive decision, not a production decision, because there are people still saying, oh, well, she's been spotted. They're still doing some cleanup filming. What does this mean? Has she done her regeneration sequence yet? Doesn't matter. There have been many instances of series that have started airing their season while there are still production blocks in cycle. Mm-hmm. So the least you could do is give us a specific date. We've already gone through, we're about to come up on New York Comic Con, which is usually one of the points where we start getting trailers and all this stuff. But at that point, we've always already had dates, and now we just want to see something of it. So this is an absolutely ridiculous delay, and it is losing potential audience by the day.
It's not like they're like laying this trail of breadcrumbs, and it's like, oh, we're just like teasing the audience. It's like nothing. Nothing. Like, they could have even, announced, see a full trailer in 2 weeks or something. Like, anything. Tell us what's going on.
And that's – I can understand what they're attempting to do, in that they're little bits to get people talking about it, which is exactly what we're doing. The problem is what people are talking about is their frustration.
Right.
And so you need to give us a date, even if that date is – we will release the official launch date on this date. You know, give us something to look forward to, because right now, all it is are these 7-second blurbs that, you know, you happen to snatch at some point. So it's working in that we're talking about it. We're just not talking about what we need to be talking about.
And how many of us are actually talking, though? We're well inside the echo chamber.
Yeah, true.
I think this one more so than the Easter egg hunt or whatever, at least this was on people's television that are trying to watch something. So people saw this. They don't know what it was. But the Easter egg hunt thing, that is only appealing to your hardest core of viewers. They're the only ones that even know what's going on.
And even that turned into a big disappointment that got people ticked off at the end of it, because it was a giant nothing burger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I want a something burger.
Oh, yeah. A double something burger.
Let's not talk about burgers. I'm hungry.
But yeah, so it is getting to the point now where if for nothing else, and again, I got to say this probably has absolutely no bearing on the production team. This probably has, this is no fault of Chris Chibnall's. This is no fault of D-Neg as the effects team, because they're normally the ones a lot of people point at and say, they're probably doing post-production. They're doing, you know, visual cleanup on this. That's probably taking an extraordinary amount of time. I am willing to bet that the vast majority of the series is in the can, done, ready to go. And they just can't figure out how to promote it.
What this is somebody being like, no, it's going to be great. They're not going to know anything, and we're going to give them little hints and things like that. And then boom, before they know it, it's on. We're like, you're coming back on Saturday. That's when it is. And they think that it's going to be this thing that people are excited because, oh, there's no wait. It's just here. But they don't take into account that we've been waiting with nothing on our plates. So somebody made a decision and miscalculated how rabid the fan base can be for information.
Because when you combine that with how restrictive their conversations, when they've done press junkets, convention video conference convention panels and things like that, they have been so limited on what they could say about the season to come that we don't even have that to go on. So there's very little to provide for the water cooler conversation that gets people saying, all right, well, you know, I don't care when it comes, because what's coming is going to be fantastic. So you've got no anticipation of the of suggested content, because there have been no suggestions, and you have no anticipation of a pending point on the calendar, because there's been none provided. So if you can't meet us on one or the other side of that coin, the audience is just going to get frustrated and say, you know what, I really did want to see The Expanse, or I've heard that they're going to be doing a reboot of Babylon 5, so I'm going to go rewatch that. And they're gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know what we do have? We got the Dan plan.
The Dan
agenda. The Dan agenda.
Watch him be like the really charming thing that everyone's like, oh, well, at least he's just a big teddy bear. So that's nice.
Maybe he'll be great, but we don't know, because we haven't seen a second of footage of him.
Nope. We saw him unload a box from a van and not speak a line in his reveal trailer. Yep. But he lifts a box like the best of them.
With his legs.
From the knees. He lifts from the
knees.
Well, next week we're going to be coming back with our classic rewatch with the story Snake Dance.
Yep. This is an opportunity to revisit the giant snakes.
Because we didn't get enough of that last time.
It worked so well in Kinda that we're doing it all over again.
I feel like those fireworks that are the little mini hockey pucks, and you set a match on top of it. Oh, yeah, the little carbon things that you
burn.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you never know which direction they're going to go, and you never quite like how they turn out.
That's why you got to burn, like, 12 of them at once.
Yeah. Well, remember how, like, last episode we talked about the, you know, how they spent a whole bunch of their budget going to the Netherlands for a film shoot? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not going to bite us in the ass at all.
Right. But bear in mind, though, we do have to admit that when we watched Kinda for all of Adric's, you know, I'm stuck inside a giant robot or any of those, you know, things, or the weird, freaky, deaky dream sequences and stuff, this was a great performance for Janet Fielding when she got to play, like, inverse mind control Tegan. So
it was.
So yeah. I got that on my hope list.
Well, this has been episode 443 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I'm going to grab another soda. Anybody want one? I mean, I can't get enough of these things.
This is Kier saying, drink it, drink it, drink it, drink it.
This is Julie saying, look what you can do when you actually have a good marketing department.
And
Bubble Shock.
This is Haley saying, I enjoyed our trip to the Slurm Factory.
We'll see you next week.
I'll see.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.